to read anything with your name on it. I break the seal and smile at Zayden's handwriting, but it quickly slips. V, we fought in Fervin last night, called by an attack upon civilians. It is with deepest regret that I delay my return in favor of rest. I walked the edge of burnout, but the lives we saved were worth the cost, and Garrick has informed the healers I'll be in quarters, recovering, until further notice. Llewellyn is standing in as proxy in case the Cenarium orders any emergency meetings. It is worse than we imagined beyond the wards, but I have a solution in mind to prevent future burnouts. Is it just me? Or does my pillow smell like you? Yours, X. My steps slow as we make our way down the tunnel, dread thickening my throat, and I pause at the top of the staircase that leads to the interrogation chamber and stuff the letter into the breast pocket inside my uniform. He slipped. Imogen tenses. He said that? I shake my head. He was careful with his wording, but I'm sure. There's no other reason he'd need to lock himself away in his quarters to recover from a near burnout, unless he's waiting for his eyes to return to their normal color. Fuck. She starts down the steps and I follow. We need to get him off the border. I know, and I need to find a cure.
You're sure this is how you want to go about it?
Imogen stifles another yawn. Every possible path, I tell her, running my hands down my sheaths to make sure each dagger is in place, as well as a vial or two. He's the only direct source of information we have. You sure you're up for this? I completely understand if you're too tired. They're running the third years into the ground. I could do this shit in my sleep. She unbuttons her flight jacket. You meet with Grady yet? Next week, I sigh. He's still researching before he'll deign to meet with me. But he sent a first draft of the squad yesterday, and the only writer I know on it is Aura fucking Bynehaven. Because get this, she's a trustable companion of my own age and the most powerful fire wielder in the quadrant. Does he know you've already almost killed her this month? She lifts her brows. Don't think he cares. He has no idea where to start either, which I only know because he tried to get his dragon to question Andarna. And that's after reading my report stating everything she remembered about her first 100 years in Shell, which, like most dragons late to hatch, is nothing.
How did that go for him? Imogen asks, her brow scrunching.
Taryn removed a dozen of her neck scales and Andarna left teeth marks in her tail. We'll collect enough next time to make you new armor, Andarna promises.
From his dragon, thank you, but no, I reply.
A smile tugs at Imogen's lips.
Got exactly what she deserves.
Her smile falls. I agree you need experienced riders on the squad, but it's hard to trust judgment like that.
Emery and Heaton both look up from their card game as we come around the last turn.
You brought Sorengale with you this time? Emery asks, lifting his brows.
Clearly, Imogen replies. We cross the stone floor, and I look away from the blood-stained table as we approach.
Why do I feel like you only visit when we're on guard?
Heaton sets their cards on the table.
Also, I win.
Emery looks at what Heaton's laid down and sighs.
You have unnaturally good luck with cards.
Zanal is with me.
Heaton grins and scratches the magenta flames dyed into their hair.
Both of you going in?
They glance over our weaponry.
He probably has 24 hours left at this rate, but I can't vouch for what he's capable of.
I've got this. I pat the vial strapped to my upper biceps.
I do not doubt that. Nolan and Markham usually arrive at 7 to start their daily questioning, so be quick.
And I wouldn't expect much. He's usually silent.
Heaton unlocks the cell door, then steps out of the way.
You have visitors.
I walk into the doorway, but stop abruptly, causing Imogen to curse behind me. Jack doesn't just look like shit. He looks like death. He sprawled on the same stone floor I nearly bled out on a few months ago. but there are thick shackles around his wrists and ankles anchoring him to the wall behind the slab of a bed they must have reconstructed after Zayden blew it apart. Jack's blonde hair hangs oily and limp, and the pallid skin of his face has sunken into his skull, reminding me far more of a corpse than a human. Then again, maybe he really isn't human anymore. And what would that make Zayden? I breathe deeply, then step through the wards Mira created, magic tingling at the back of my neck as Jack lifts his red-rimmed eyes in my direction. They're still glacially blue at the center of the iris, but the red has blurred the edges. Jack? Imogen comes in behind me, then shuts the cell door, locking us in. It's a shitty but necessary evil to make sure Heaton and Emery don't hear what's discussed. I breathe in through my nose and out through my mouth, pretending this isn't the cell where Varys shattered my bones for days. But the smell of damp earth and old blood sets my teeth on edge.
What could you possibly want, Sorengale?
Jack croaks through cracked lips, not bothering to lift his cheek from the floor. Imogen leans back against the door and I crouch in front of Jack, just out of reach in case he decides to test the limits of his tether. To make an exchange.
You think, out of all the interrogations, the mendings, that I'll finally break for you?
Hatred shines from his eyes. No, I don't bother telling him that he's broken for Zayden multiple times already. But I do think you want to live. I reach into my pocket and retrieve the tiny medallion of alloy from my conduit. The shiny, heavy, metallic substance is smooth and hot in the palm of my hand, dimly humming as I hold it out for display. It's imbued with enough power to keep you alive for at least another week. His gaze snaps hungrily to the metal.
But not enough to fully feed me.
I'm not helping you escape, if that's what you're asking. I sit on the floor and cross my ankles beneath me. But answer a few questions for me, and it's yours.
And if I'd rather meet Malik,
he challenges. Does your kind meet Malik? I counter, setting the alloy just out of reach and pulling one of the glass vials from my arm strap when he doesn't respond. You're a day away from finding out. But if you'd like me to end your suffering, I came prepared to do so. The glass clicks against stone as I lay it next to the alloy.
Is that?
He stares at the vial. Powdered orange peel. Simple, yet effective in your case, given how close your body is to giving out. Merciful, too, considering your actions resulted in my mother's death. But I'm not so merciful as to leave you with a dagger. A sneer lifts his mouth as he pushes himself to sit up in a macabre display of angular, emaciated bone. Chains rattle against stone, and I'm relieved to see my estimate was right. There's 3 feet between us, but he can only cross half of it.
You were always too merciful, too weak.
True, I shrug. I have always struggled when confronted with a suffering animal. Now, unlike you, I have somewhere I need to be. So choose. His gaze drifts to the alloy.
How many questions?
Depends on how long you want to live. I push the silver-hued substance toward him, keeping it just out of reach. 4 for today. One of which I already know the answer to, just to make sure he isn't bullshitting me.
And I'm supposed to trust that you'll give it to me?
He glances toward Imogen. You're far better off with her than you are with me, asshole. I'll happily sit here and watch you die, Imogen replies. First question, I start. Can you sense each other? He stares at the alloy, then swallows.
Yes, when we're new, we're not as adept at hiding ourselves. I'm told it's so we'll be found and raised by an elder. Usually a sage, but in rare cases a maven may take interest.
A corner of his mouth lifts.
Initiates, asims, we're all traceable to one another. But the Great Hall could fill with sages and mavens, and I'd never know. Neither would you.
His eyes sparkle and red veins pulse at the corner of his eyes.
Makes you wonder who's been channeling here for years, doesn't it? Who's been trading information for power?
My heart jolts into my throat. Do you have to be taught to channel? Or can you turn evil all on your own? I ask, refusing to give him the satisfaction of admitting that I'm now terrified of who might walk among us.
Ask what you really want to know.
His voice turns raspy, and I ignore the instinct to hand him his untouched glass of water from his uneaten breakfast tray.
Ask me when I turned, how I turned. Ask why only initiates bleed.
I absorb that information and move right along. Do you have to be taught? I repeat. Zayden did it on his own, but I need to know if we're in danger from every random infantry cadet who didn't have the guts to cross the parapet. His breath rattles, and he drops his focus to the alloy.
Not if you're already experienced with the flow of magic. Someone who has never wielded would require instruction. But a dragon rider or a griffin flyer?
He shakes his head.
The source is there. We just have to choose to see it, to bypass the gatekeepers and take what's rightfully ours.
He lifts his hand, but the chain brings him up short.
Power should be accessible to everyone strong enough to wield it, not just who they see fit. You conveniently see me as the villain, but you're bonded to two.
I blatantly ignore that insult. Do you know their plan? He scoffs.
Does a first year command the wings? No, we're not as stupid as you assume. Information is need to know. What a waste of a question. One more.
Last question. I push the alloy to the edge of its current stone. How do you cure yourself once you channel from the source?
Cure.
He looks at me like I've lost my mind.
You talk like I'm diseased. When what I really am is free.
He wavers.
Well, free in part. We trade some of our autonomy in the exchange for unfettered access to power. Maybe you see it as a loss of our soul, but we aren't burdened by conscience or weakened by emotional attachment. We advance based on our own capabilities, our own talents, and not at the whim of some creature. There's no cure because magic does not negotiate. And we do not wish to be cured.
The utter disdain for the question hits like a blow to the stomach, knocking the air from my lungs. At some point, will Zayden stop wanting to be cured?
I keep my bargains, I manage to say before tossing the alloy his way.
He catches it with surprising quickness, closing his fist and then his eyes.
Yes,
he whispers, and I watch, transfixed, as his cheeks plump and fill with color. The cracks in his lips disappear, and there's a bit more substance underneath his shirt. His eyes flash open and the veins pulse beside his eyes as he flings the alloy back at me. I catch it, immediately registering its emptiness, then pocket the medallion and slip the orange peel into my armband before standing.
Do come again, he says, sitting back and raising his knees.
About a week, I reply with a nod as Imogen walks to my side. Our time is nearly up, but there's one more question I need to ask.
Why me? I add. Surely they've offered you the same reward. So why answer my questions and not theirs?
He narrows his eyes.
Did you scream for Ryerson to save you when they locked you down here and broke your bones?
I'm sorry. Blood drains from my face.
He did not just ask me that.
Jack leans forward.
Did you cry for Ryerson when they strapped you to the chair and watched your blood fill the cracks between the stones on its way to the drain?
I only ask because I swear I can feel it when I lie on the floor. All your pain singing to me like a lullaby.
I flinch.
There, Jack's smile sharpens and chills with sickening excitement. That look right there is why I chose to answer your questions. For the satisfaction of us both knowing that I can still cut you, and I don't have to lift a blade.
I breathe in the scent that haunts my nightmares and glance around the cell, half expecting to realize this has all been a hallucination, and I'm still locked into the chair, and half expecting to see Liam. But all I find are desiccated gray stones, drained of any and all magic.
Do you really think this is the only room where I've felt tormented?
Pain isn't new to me, Jack. She's an old friend I spend most of my days with. So I don't mind if she sings to you. Honestly, doesn't even look like the same chamber with how you've redecorated. It's a little monochromatic for me.
I step to the side. Imogen, I'm ready to go.
And what's to keep me from telling your favorite scribe that you've been feeding the enemy?
Jack's smile widens.
Hard to talk about something you don't remember.
Imogen steps into his space, and his grin slips. 4 minutes later, we emerge from the staircase and find Rhiannon, Riddick, and Sawyer waiting in the tunnel.
For fuck's sake, can't you four do anything by yourselves?
Imogen mutters. An excerpt from Official Records, Scribe Quadrant, Colonel Lewis Markham, Commandant. Upon failure of 3 exams, Jacinia Neilwart has been removed from the Adept Path and stripped of all its responsibilities and sacred privileges as of January 15th. Under protest, I transfer her command to Professor Grady at his over-authoritative request.
Chapter 13.
What?
Rhiannon shrugs and pushes off the wall.
We didn't tag along while Violet played Inquisitor. We respect boundaries.
Do you even have boundaries with one another? Imogen shoots a look at the three of them.
If you're all going with her, then I'll excuse myself from what I'm sure will be a fascinating trip to the archives.
See you at formation. She gives Rhi a mock salute and heads left toward the quadrant.
He basically said we could be surrounded by Venon and never know it, I tell them.
That's super comforting, Sawyer replies.
You look good,
I add, noting the color in his cheeks as he balances on his crutches.
Fresh haircut? Clean shave?
It's almost like he got up early and prepared for the visit,
Riddick teases as we head down the tunnel, keeping Sawyer at our center.
Shut up, Sawyer shakes his head. I was up early trying to fit a god's awful hunk of wood to my leg because it's the only time the wood carver had available. I'm starting to think I should just make something myself.
You should. And I bet the thought of seeing a certain scribe made the hour tolerable.
A smile pulls at Rhi's mouth to my right.
Do we give you shit about whatever you have going with Tara? Or the fact that Ryerson and Sorengil fight like an old married couple?
Sawyer glares in our direction, then Riddick's, but there's no hiding his immediate blush, even in the mage lights.
Riddick bedhops like a fucking frog, but no, let's give me crap.
We make it a few steps before none of us can smother our laughs.
A frog? Riddick grins from Sawyer's left. That's the best you can do? A frog?
Tara and I are old news, Rhi shrugs. Leadership is hard on both our schedules. We're together when we have time, but it's not like we're seeing other people.
She shoots a sideways glance my way.
But he's right. You and Ryerson bicker like you've been married 50 years and neither of you wants to do the dishes.
That is not true, I protest as Sawyer nods.
Agreed,
Riddick says, and it's always the same fight. He lifts his hand to his chest.
I'll trust you if you stop keeping secrets.
He drops his hand and scowls.
It's my secretive nature that attracted you, and why can't you just stay out of harm's way for 5 fucking minutes?
Rhi laughs so hard she nearly chokes. I narrow my gaze on Riddick.
Keep talking,
and I'll plant my dagger somewhere that prevents all frog-like activity.
Don't hit on me for being the only truly single one out of us and enjoying every minute.
We round the corner, and the enormous circular door to the archives comes into view.
I bet leadership secretly loves that you're with Ryerson, Sawyer says to me, shifting his grip on the handrail of his right crutch. Legacies usually make for stronger riders, and with as much power as you two wield, Melgren will probably escort you both to a temple of your choosing the second you're commissioned.
Doubt Loial would let me in, I mutter. Can't remember the last time I stepped foot in her temple. I'd stopped praying to her years ago, along with Hedion out of pure spite. Love and wisdom hadn't exactly shown up when I'd needed them to.
If the general even waits that long, Rhee lifts her brows, Ryerson's already graduated.
Not something we've discussed, I shake my head. And I'm not against it in the future, but I'm more focused on living until graduation. What about you?
Maybe one day, she muses. Just saying that you're lucky Melgren hasn't yanked you out of battle brief and personally seen to the arrangements and hope that your kid will be the next one with battle foresight in 21 years.
Rhee bumps my shoulder.
Shame he's so short-sighted, Riddick says as we pass the first-year scribe sitting guard at the door.
The scent of parchment and ink hits my lungs, welcoming me home. I stare down the stacks that line the right side of the cavernous space like my father might walk out at any second.
We're here to see Cadet Neelwort, Rhee tells the first-year scribe manning the entrance table, which marks the invisible line only those in cream robes are allowed to cross.
The cadet hurries off as Riddick pulls out a chair for Sawyer, and our friend sits in the same exact place I'd spent years of my life preparing to enter this quadrant.
You all right? Rhee asks quietly.
I nod and force a quick smile. Just caught up in my head.
Relax, Violet.
Riddick takes the seat next to Sawyer.
It's not like the fate of our world rests on you finding whatever's left of the Irids.
He rubs the back of his neck.
Do you guys think it's short for iridescent?
Yes, the three of us simultaneously reply.
Damn, let's go back to picking on Sawyer.
Riddick leans in his chair as Jacinia walks our way, her arms full of leather-bound tomes. A third year steps into her path and she skirts him. The incident repeats with a second year a few rows closer to us.
They're worse than riders.
Sawyer's knuckles whiten on the crutches as he arranges them against the table.
They really are, I agree, noting with pride that Jacinia keeps her head high as a third year blatantly glares her way from the first row of study tables.
I narrow my eyes at him, and he flinches when he notices.
I'm petitioning Grady to be on the quest squad, Riddick says, signing as Jacinia reaches us. Think he'll say yes?
He raises his brows in her direction. She sets six books down on the table and lifts her hands.
Is Violet in need of an ice wielder?
She signs.
She could be, Riddick says and signs. Guess it all depends on your research.
No pressure,
she signs and rolls her eyes, but they soften the second her gaze lands on Sawyer.
You didn't have to walk all the way down here, she signs and Riddick translates. I would have come to you.
I wanted here. Sawyer signs slowly.
Rhiannon and I share a grin. He's learning quickly. Two lines of worry appear between Jacinia's brows, right beneath the line of her cream hood, but she nods, then looks at me.
I've brought you six tomes I think may be of some use, she signs, and Riddick translates for Sawyer quietly.
Do you need me to bury bodies? I ask, my hands moving quickly to sign. Because Andarna will happily roast some scribes if they're acting like assholes.
Gladly, she chimes in gleefully.
No, Taryn rebukes. Don't encourage her.
Jacinia glances back at the cadets who are gathering to start their day.
I have seen enough bloodshed, she signs. And I can handle the punishment meted out for my desertion of the quadrant.
Punishment? My stomach sours. They kicked. Sawyer starts to sign the word push instead and drops his hands.
Damn it, he swears at the ceiling. Riddick,
I've got you, Riddick says and signs. And I promise I won't make any sexual plans for you later. Jacinia's eyes widen.
Gods help us, Ree mutters, then quickly signs it. Riddick!
They're the ones losing out, Riddick says and signs.
And to think, I sign to Jacinia, keeping my mouth shut, it was almost just the two of us at this table.
She presses her lips between her teeth, fighting a smile.
As I was saying, Sawyer shoots a glare at Riddick as he translates. They kicked her out of the Adept program, made up some bullshit tests they knew she'd fail.
My stomach sinks. I knew Markham would find a way to punish her for choosing Aracia, but never imagined he'd expel his brightest scribe from the path where she's so desperately needed.
Jacinia's attention snaps from Riddick to Sawyer, and I wouldn't wish the look she gives him on my worst enemy.
That was not your information to share, she signs. Riddick repeats.
That one I understood,
Sawyer mutters.
They needed to know, based on your new orders.
I disagree, she signs back, then blatantly looks away, her gaze finding mine.
Do not worry about me. I'm not out there fighting Venon, she spells out the word.
I'm so sorry, I whisper and sign.
Don't be, she shakes her head. I've been given the one assignment with which they know I can be trusted, helping you with research. Well, officially under Grady, but it's really you.
And they narrowed her scope of knowledge? It takes all the grace in my body to swallow the boulder of anger rising in my throat.
I didn't want that for you.
She makes a face at me.
Oh, please, she signs. I'm left on my own with a treasure trove of royal tomes no one has read in at least the last 400 years.
Look at me suffering. She rolls her eyes and smiles.
Did you find mention of the Irids? Riddick asks.
Jacinia blinks once, giving Riddick a look I've seen enough times to wince on his behalf as she begins to sign.
Yes, in the second tome I pulled.
Really?
His face lights up.
Absolutely, she signs, her face completely deadpan. It was recorded that when the last Irid hatches and bonds the cadet born of rider and scribe, she'll be gifted with two signets.
You're kidding, he signs excitedly. There's a prophecy?
He turns toward me. Violet, you're a—
I shake my head quickly, wrinkling my nose.
Riddick sighs and lifts his hands toward Jacinia.
You really are kidding, aren't you? There's no prophecy.
Oh, you're so fucked. Sawyer whispers. Jacinia leans over the table slightly in his direction.
Of course there's no prophecy, she signs with abrupt motions, her eyes narrowed on him, and this time Rhiannon translates for Sawyer.
Just research. I've barely finished translating Lyra's journal and now have 600 years of personal accounts to read through.
Do you really think I found the answer in the first week of accessing the vault, or that I wouldn't have gone straight to Violet with that information?
I rock back on my heels.
I was hoping, Riddick says and signs. And you're kind of scary when you're angry.
I am not some oracle high off whatever they're serving in the temple that day. I am an extremely educated scribe. Treat me as such, and I won't get angry. She replies, then turns toward me.
Now, I gathered these six for you to read, which mostly cover the southernmost isle of Devarelli, since that's the last isle we had communication with. Figured that's where you might start, but I'll warn you that Grady has requested tomes about Emerald Sea exploration in the north.
She pushes the tomes across the table and lifts her hands again.
Honestly, I'm appalled with what isn't in the vault. Thank gods Queen Mariah sent her list for you, because we're missing—
She cocks her head to the side.
I don't even know what we're missing. I was reading General Cadeo's journal yesterday, and a whole section of pages is ripped out after he notes that there may have been an outside aisle supporting the second Krovlin uprising.
She drops her arms in exasperation.
I can't research what we don't have.
The second Krovlin uprising was supported by an Isle Kingdom? I say, and sign slowly just to be sure I have it right.
But that was
in the 400s, right? And it was assumed that Cordon sent soldiers. We severed all communication with most isles after they sided with Poromiel around 206. And they in turn killed every emissary we sent in the centuries that followed, so how would General Cadeo know that?
Exactly, she signs. I can only think of one scribe who might have that answer.
She lifts her brows at me. Oh, I blink, quickly processing the information, then swearing as I reach the inevitable damning conclusion.
Is it you? Rhee asks me, simultaneously signing. Oh no, is it Markham?
I shake my head.
My father. And all his research, the work he had yet to publish, is now really hard to access. My shoulders dip. I'd been so focused on getting out of Mom's quarters with her journals after she died that I'd completely forgotten what my father had left hidden.
Hard to access, like we need Arik and a midnight mission? Sawyer asks, and Riddick translates.
Hard to access, like we need Dane to betray his father.
Which is highly unlikely.
After disowning him in front of the Quadrant, that shouldn't be hard, Rhiannon says, lifting her brows as she signs.
And it's not like Dane hasn't already betrayed him, Sawyer adds.
I shake my head. He left Navarre, not his father. And believe me when I tell you there's a difference. I glance at the books, then back up at Jacinia. Thank you for these. And all the work you're doing. I'll start here.
3 days later, I'm in battle brief, still pondering the Dane problem as Devera flicks her wrist, and the largest map of the continent I've ever seen unfurls over the Quadrant's rendering.
And it's a terrifying sight. I'm guessing they delivered that with our things from Aracia yesterday,
Kat notes from my left.
There is way more red on that map than I'm comfortable with,
Rhee remarks, tapping her pen on her notebook.
The damning color spans from the Barrens up the Stonewater River and ends just short of Samara before spreading along the ward line like the enemy is searching for weaknesses. But Samara still stands. Zayden's safe, at least for now. He's been gone more than 10 days, and Tarn is at his wit's end, which makes two of us. Every day he's out there, he risks his soul and sanity. Either he has to produce that solution he promised, or we have to find a way to get him off the border. Most of Breivik is saturated with red flags, especially along the Dunas River. But Signeason hasn't been recently attacked, nor have they sent their cadets yet. Breivik's capital, Zolia, fell months ago, but the kingdom's seat of power, Suniva, still stands in the province's north. I can't help but wonder where Queen Mariah's summer house and her library are, and hope they're at least well protected. Cordon's still safe, I whisper to Kat. For how long at this rate?
Her mouth purses, but I don't take it personally. My sister is stationed in Aracia. Hers is beyond the wards. As you can see, Devera says, quieting the room, there is a defined, supported assault happening along the wards, centered at the Samara outpost. We believe it's simply because it's the straightest path that leads to here, the hatching grounds.
I lift my eyebrows. It's not like her to give us the answers.
Our knowledge of the Venon up until this point has been somewhat impeded,
Devera admits. That is an understatement, Riddick mumbles under his breath.
And I'm sure some of you have been frustrated at the lack of instruction for the last couple of weeks. If you reach beneath your seats, you'll discover why we've been waiting.
I bend at the waist like every other cadet, finding a thick, canvas-bound book under my chair and retrieving it. I blink through the head rush as I sit up too quickly, then glance at the plain spine before flipping to the table of contents.
Captain Lara Dorrell's Guide to Vanquishing the Venon, I read.
Venin, a compendium, and more. Look, they made us a little anthology.
You've already read them all, haven't you? Rhee asks, thumbing through her copy.
All but the last one, Dark Wielders and Dark Times. Takaris sent them to me in Erasia.
My cousin Drake wrote the compendium, Kat preens.
Yes, we get it, Kat. You're better, Riddick glances at Rhee. We need a copy for Sawyer.
Rhee nods. We can't let him fall too behind, or he'll struggle to get caught up when he decides to return.
Haven't seen too many one-legged riders around here. Kat slips her anthology under her notebook. Or any. Maybe you should ask him what he wants before making assumptions.
She has a point, so I don't snap at her for the first comment.
The cadets in the Scribe Quadrant have worked tirelessly over the last couple of weeks, printing enough copies for you each to have one. Tavera sits back against the table. Nothing in this book is new to the Flyers, of course, so I expect you all to pass the first test of your new history class with flying colors. She gestures to Keandra. This particular course will be taught by Professor Keandra, and, for the sake of speed and convenience, will take place in this room on Tuesdays and Thursdays. As our runes expert has declined to come to us, you will also be rotating in two-week cycles to Erasia for rune intensives. Check with your section leaders for the new schedule regarding sharing the flight field and your room dates. A class-wide grumble fills the room, even from the third years behind us. I glance over my shoulder and note Dane in the top row. He's been gone so often, I haven't had a chance to ask him about helping me get to Dad's research.
Don't complain, Tavera warns, lifting her finger. We're only adding three classes to the schedule, all of which will save your lives.
Three more classes? Riddick moans, and the sentiment is echoed around the room. On top of Quest Squad research? He glances my way. I'm only halfway through the first Devarelli text as it is.
A smile pulls at my mouth that he's jumped in with both feet, regardless of knowing there's absolutely no chance of him going.
I mean it. Whiners don't wear black, Professor Devera snaps. Read the book and live.
Don't.
And die.
She sighs, then squares her shoulders and looks around the room.
I do, however, regret to inform you that a crucial piece of information surfaced during printing, and therefore is not included.
It has now been confirmed by three different sources that high-level Venin, we believe Sage and Maven, can and do wield signets.
Silence falls thicker than the snow outside, every cadet beside those of us who already knew freezing completely.
It took them 10 days to confirm?
I know, Tavera says with uncharacteristic gentleness. It's a shock. I'll give you a second to sit with it. I spot more than one head dropping in the rows ahead of us, like we've just been handed our defeat. I can't blame them. Most of us have only been taught to battle flyers with lesser magics.
And that's all the time you get, Tavera stands. Welcome to the new face of battle, where we are not only outnumbered in the sky, but now equally matched on the field in terms of the skill of our opponents. You can and should expect to face a Dark Wielder with the same abilities as your friends, your squad mates, she glances my way, and yourselves.
Another murmur rises, and Professor Tavera silences it by raising her hand.
With that in mind, the nature of challenges will change under the supervision of Professor Emeterio to include wielding in order to better prepare you for actual combat.
Her voice rises above the growing number of worried conversations.
But death is no longer an acceptable outcome when you face your classmates. The days of settling your scores on the mat are over. We need each and every one of you to survive to graduation.
Easy to say when you're not facing Sorengale, Caroline Ashton calls out.
Fair point, I have no business wielding on a challenge mat.
We aren't going to throw you to the wolves, Tavera tells her. The third class you'll be adding will be a hands-on approach to prepare you for signet-against-signet combat. You will have a rotating roster of professors to benefit from all signet types, and the Eastern Wing has temporarily loaned us their most powerful rider to start your instruction.
My throat tightens and my heart starts to pound.
And on that note, Devera gestures to the door at the back of the room, and I turn so fast my vision swims. Look who just arrived.
Zayden stands next to Professor Kaori in the doorway, casually leaning against the frame with his arms crossed, with a tiny yet undeniable tilt to his mouth as our eyes lock. I smile instantly. Thank you, gods. He found a way to stay within the wards by teaching. Teaching. Oh, shit. Article 8, Section 1 of the Bezgaya Code of Conduct. My face falls, and Zayden tilts his head as shadows brush against my shields. What's wrong? He asks when I let him in.
Everyone, welcome our newest member of your leadership team, Professor Ryerson, Devera announces.
My ribs strain, as if they can hold my heart together if they just squeeze tight enough. I think our relationship just ended.
An excerpt from Tactics Part 2, A Personal Memoir by Lieutenant Lyran Panchek. Though flyers only wield lesser magics, in my vast experience with the Northern Wing, they are formidable opponents in both mind work and hand-to-hand. Take heed, younger riders. Do not unseat against them unless forced to do so.
Chapter 14.
Absolutely not, Zayden responds before Kaori leads him away. But there's a slight roaring in my ears as Devera goes over the changes to our academic schedule and how we'll be paired for Zayden's new class, which she labels Signet Sparring. We're dismissed a few minutes later.
I'm fine. This is fine. I'll think about it later. For now, I stay focused on the goal directly in front of me, who happens to be halfway down the hall by the time I file out of battle brief with the rest of my squad.
You don't look happy, Ree notices, shooting me a sideways glance.
Why? You two will get to see each other all the time now.
Sure. My nod is a little forced. Every time we have class. I bounce up on my toes, but I'm still too short to see past the crowd of cadets. I need to catch up to Dane.
Dane? Zayden shows up and you're talking to Dane?
Ree puts the back of her hand to my forehead. Just making sure you're not running a fever.
After that announcement, I'm not really sure I can handle seeing Zayden right now, to be honest.
I tell her quietly so Kat doesn't hear.
Gods, she's going to gloat over this.
And I haven't seen Dane in days. I need to ask him. I lift my brows.
Right.
She nods as we pass two third-year classrooms, then peers ahead. He's in Professor Kaori's office doorway, talking to Bodhi.
You going to tell me what's going on with Ryerson?
Thanks. Article 8, Section 1, Code of Conduct. I speed ahead, weaving through the river of cadets.
Ouch! Don't be late to flight tactics, she calls after me.
To my relief, Dane hasn't moved by the time I reach the deep arch of Kaori's doorway and step out of the current so I don't hold anyone up or get trampled. Dane glances my way, then gives me his full attention, leaning up against the closed door and making room for me.
Vi?
I'm sorry to interrupt, but you've been at Midland Posts for days, and I need to talk to you. I adjust the straps of my pack on my sore shoulders. Imogen has been relentless with the workouts this week, and my solo-wielding sessions are taking a toll on my arms, too.
You're not interrupting, Dane assures me. We're just figuring out the flight field scheduling issue.
Bodhi glances between us.
Need some privacy?
Not from you, I shake my head.
Ah, he gestures to his spot, and I swap places with him as he puts his back to the crowd. That should be a little quieter for you.
What's going on?
Dane asks, lowering his voice. I push aside any lingering apprehension. This might be my only shot.
I need your help, and I know it's asking a lot, so I'm just gonna lay it out there and then give you some time to decide.
The hall empties gradually behind Bodhi.
That sounds ominous. Dane searches my eyes. Are you in trouble?
No, I shake my head. I need something my father left in my parents' quarters before he died. It's nothing that needed to be burned or anything like that.
Research?
Dane guesses, his expression softening. I nod. It's hidden, and the quarters of Bezgaeth's commanding general are warded, so only their line by blood or marriage can pass through. And now that bloodline is no longer mine.
Right.
His throat works. You'd be better off asking my father yourself. I'm not exactly his favorite person at the moment. He blinks, quickly masking the pain that flashes through his eyes. He's just a few rooms down with Panchak right now.
I'm more concerned that he might not give it to me, I say slowly. He mentioned last year that he wanted it, and I'm scared he'll keep it for himself or that he or Markham will redact the information.
Dane folds his arms.
So you want me to help you steal it?
Yes. There's no point in lying.
Not sure he really considers me part of the bloodline, Dane starts, but then the door opens behind him.
Well, that didn't take you long, Kaori says with a laugh, then looks over his shoulder.
I don't think they're here for me, he turns back to us. Make it quick, cadets. He has a meeting to attend in about 10 minutes. Now, if you'll excuse me.
We part, and Professor Kaori heads into the empty hall.
Professor Ryerson?
Dane's tone isn't exactly respectful as Zayden fills the doorway. My pulse leaps and I drink in the sight of him, stubbled cheeks, full lips, and gorgeous eyes. There's no hint of red to be seen.
Violet?
Zayden ignores Dane and his cousin, his voice sliding over my skin like velvet.
A word in private?
Not a good idea, I shake my head slowly.
I'm certain I've had worse ones.
He holds out his hand. You're now a professor. Clutching the straps on my pack keeps me from reaching for him. I'm a cadet.
And?
Zayden glowers at me.
Oh, shit.
Dane says quietly. Article 8, Section 1 of the Code of Conduct.
Wait, you two broke up?
Bodhi's voice rises. Yes, I answer.
No?
Zayden says at the same time, glaring at his cousin, then jerking his gaze to mine.
No, he repeats. I mean, if you're our new professor, then the code applies, at least for as long as you hold the position,
Dane muses.
And I can't think of a single piece of codex that overrides it.
No one asked you, Atos, Zayden warns.
Don't blame me, I didn't write the code.
Dane backs into the hall with his hands up.
Nor did I accept the job.
Zayden tenses.
Well, I have a class, so good luck handling this one.
Bodhi hurries after Dane. Zayden waits half a second before grabbing the right strap of my pack and tugging me into Kaori's room. So much for getting to class on time. He lets me go and closes the door behind us.
Garrick didn't come with you? As stalling tactics come, it's a lazy one, but it's all I have as I retreat toward Kaori's desk, avoiding the two chairs sitting in front of it.
The office is one of the bigger ones, boasting two arched windows and a built-in bookcase with tomes stacked haphazardly to fill every possible inch.
Considering he was dangerously close to my side when I lost control, we decided the babysitting program wasn't as effective as we'd hoped.
Zayden leans against the wall to the left of the door, his shoulder resting along the frame of a painted rendering of the first six's dragons. But not seven.
You're here now, so it won't happen again. I brace my palms on the desk and jump to sit on its edge.
I made myself a promise that I would do anything to save you, to cure you. So if that means we can't be—
Do not finish that sentence.
He walks my way, and my heartbeat increases with every step he takes. You're already the deadliest here, so it's not like I have to worry about grading you fairly. This changes nothing.
We live by the Codex, I try again. I live by you. When have I ever given a fuck about the Codex or the Code of Conduct?
He cradles my face and leans down, resting his forehead against mine.
I am yours, and you are mine, and there's no law or rule in this world or the next that will change that.
My eyes slide shut, like that might stop my heart from falling even harder for this man.
So what do we do?
Kaori thinks we can get an exemption. I just have to ask Pancheck here in a few minutes. His thumbs graze my cheeks and I slowly open my eyes, clinging to the hope that he might be right. That it could just be that easy.
No matter what, we have to keep you here. You were only on the border for a week.
And look what happened. I don't have to say what we're both thinking.
I know, he lifts his head. And the worst part is, I don't even remember reaching for the source or taking the power during the battle. It was simply there. If Sigale hadn't...
His chest rises with a deep breath.
She spoke to me for the first time.
Yelled is a more accurate term, and I snapped out of it. But the damage was done.
I let you down.
You didn't. I clasp his wrists. We'll figure this out, and if Pancheck agrees to the exemption, I have a few things I need to catch you up on. He nods.
I'll meet you in your room. The door opens and I drop my hands, but Zayden doesn't move an inch.
Ah, Professor Ryerson,
Atos says from the doorway.
Kaori mentioned you might be in here, so I thought I'd handle the awkward business of you inevitably asking for an exemption to the Code of Conduct, so you don't embarrass yourself in front of Colonel Pancheck.
My stomach dips. I don't need Melgren's signet to know this battle isn't going to go our way.
General Atos, Zayden's hands slide from my cheeks in a slow caress, and then he turns to face the commander. I'm formally requesting an exemption in regard to Article 8, Section 1, on the grounds that this is a previously existing relationship and the post is temporary. Denied, Atos responds without sparing a second. I'll obey Melgren's order and give you the position, even though I think there are riders better suited for it. But make no mistake, Ryerson.
I don't want you here. Pardon or no pardon. Title or not.
I won't forget that you murdered the Vice Commandant in cold blood a few short months ago and ripped this institution apart. Your attachment to Cadet Sorengale gives me the perfect excuse to kick you off my campus, and I will joyfully take it should you break the Code of Conduct, Professor. It may be General Melgren's army, but it's my school. Do you understand?
Gods, I fucking hate him.
That you're an asshole? Absolutely, Zayden holds up his finger. And insulting you isn't against the Code of Conduct.
I checked.
Atos flushes scarlet and snaps a glare in my direction.
Farewells are over. Get to class, cadet.
Nothing changes. We just do what we're best at, Zayden says.
Steal half the quadrant's riot and run for Erasia? I slide off the desk, anger stirring my power to a simmer.
No, smartass, sneak around. At least for now.
For now, I agree, as General Atos clears the doorway just in time for me to pass through. Just so you know who to hate, I say over my shoulder once I'm in the hall. Zayden didn't kill Varish.
I did.
Atos stiffens, and his eyes bulge as Dane steps out of the shadowy archway directly across the hall. Come on, Violet. I'll walk you to class. Dane looks at his father like the man has abandoned his dragon to die on the battlefield. We walk silently until we reach the stairwell.
The blame isn't solely yours. You struck the final blow, but we both know I killed Varish, Dane says quietly as we descend to the third floor.
You could have told him, maybe use the information to help you get that exemption.
And how would that help you?
Oh. I'm beyond help when it comes to my father.
He huffs out a miserable laugh. And my father is clearly just beyond help in general.
Dane, I whisper,
hating that he looks like how I felt about my mother last year.
He'll be in Caldeer next weekend. Dane nods as if making a choice. We'll get your father's research then. It feels like anything but a victory. The next Monday, I contemplate slamming my head against the 12-person table that fills what Mom had called the planning chamber on the second floor of the administration building. It would probably be a better use of my time than listening to Captain Grady and Lieutenant... should have already forgotten his name. Argue about possible locations to search in front of the map of the continent that hangs between the two windows. My favorite part of the map? The hand-drawn, shapeless blobs that are supposed to represent the Isle Kingdoms to the south and east. It's taken me exactly 3 minutes of this meeting to decide that no one knows what the fuck we're doing. Jacinia has rolled her eyes twice from the left end of the table, where she sits with a stack of books, quill, and parchment, keeping record of the meeting, and who's now officially been chosen for the mission. Please tell me you're almost here, I say to Zayden as the shadowy bond between us strengthens with proximity. Climbing the stairs, he replies. Northward is obviously the answer, Grady signs simultaneously as he speaks, just as everyone has since the beginning of the meeting, then scratches a beard that isn't as neatly trimmed as he usually keeps it. Yes, we should absolutely venture into undiscovered territory, Captain Anna Winshire mutters sarcastically in the seat to my right. She's a talkative infantry captain with strawberry blonde hair, quick brown eyes, and serrated blades strapped to both her shoulders. But other than the myriad of ribboned awards for valor sewn onto her uniform, I can't figure out why she's been chosen for the squad. In fact, I can't figure out why any of them have. There are at least three older riders I've just met for the first time sitting across from me, and the one I already know, Aura, is as far away as possible on the right side, closest to the map. But at least Halden isn't here, and he wasn't on the draft roster either, which is a relief. Maybe they've decided against a royal representative after all. Grady's still arguing with his team. North is... The door swings open at my left and Zayden steps in. Every head turns in his direction, but mine whips fastest. The last 4 days have felt like an eternity. Being close to him without having the kind of access I'm used to is frustrating as hell. I'm constantly aware of where he is when his shields are down, and even when they're up, I find myself looking around every corner in hopes there's something more to the shadows. With Zayden sleeping in the professor's quarters, turns out that sneaking around isn't just hard, it's impossible. There's a Novarian rider watching everywhere I go. The library? Ewan Faber has one convenient eye on the squad. The dormitory? Aura finds a sudden interest in late-night hall patrols. Going to visit Sawyer. Caroline Ashton and her minions trail along behind. This is a closed meeting, Lieutenant Forgot His Name says, drawing his dimpled chin back in indignation. I forgive you for failing to invite me, Zayden replies, sinking into the chair on my left. I bite back a smile. He might think he's changed, but that comment is undeniably him. We're not taking a separatist, the lieutenant starts to argue, his hands moving almost violently as he signs. You already are, I interrupt with a sweet smile. Jacinia tucks her chin into her robes, and I know she's muffling a laugh. We can waste time arguing, Zayden says, or we can just agree that Terran isn't going anywhere without Sigail and move on. Quill scratches across parchment as Jacinia quickly takes notes, but there's a definite smirk on her mouth still. Captain Grady's jaw flexes, but I have to respect that it's his only outward display of annoyance. Anyone with a set of bars on their shoulders should have predicted this, but I'm curious to see how he'll handle it, considering how illogically our squad has been formed. Fine, he finally says. Cadet Neil Ward, please add his name to our roster. He glances down the table. Everyone here has been chosen for this mission because I trust them. Make your introductions if you haven't, he orders the others, then turns to look at the map. Captain Henson.
The woman with tightly woven black braids to his right replies, nodding, "Air wielder." "Lieutenant Pugh," the next man narrows his pale blue eyes. "Farsight." "Lieutenant Foley." "Ah, that's his name. Agrarian."
"Cadet Beinhaven," Aura lifts her chin. "Fire wielder."
"Lieutenant Winshire," Anna smiles. "Infantry liaison."
"Lieutenant Ryerson," Zayden replies. It's like he pulled a list of the most common signets and started choosing names.
"And there are no flyers or Aration riders," I fiddle with my pen. "Doesn't exactly speak to the spirit of alliance."
"Why no shield signets?" Zayden asks. "Clearly, we'll be out beyond the wards. Unless you think there's an entire den hiding within Navarre's borders that the Empyrean doesn't know about." "You were able to hide one," Foley snaps. "Thinking the Empyrean wasn't aware for 6 years tells me all I need to know about where your and your dragon's priorities are," Zayden shrugs. "Stop," Grady orders. "And I've asked General Tynery for a particular shield wielder, just waiting on a response."
Zayden's brow knits for a millisecond, just long enough to let me know he's digging around people's intentions.
"You could just ask me. Mira Sorengale is the only rider proven beyond the wards, and she's stationed in Aracia."
I grip the pen. Mira had been my first choice in this mission to begin with.
If they'd asked me. "Which is the southern wing and clearly under the command of General Tynery," Pugh glowers at Zayden.
"Except for Tirindor," Zayden replies,
"which, as of the second Aracia Accord, now falls to the reigning house." He cocks his head to the side. "Well, really Ulysses and Killen, but they answer to me." Quill rasping against parchment is the only sound as some jaws are picked up off the floor and others lock.
I sit back in my chair and fight the urge to smile.
Have to say, the casual flex of power is pretty hot.
"Don't," he warns. "I'm barely keeping my hands to myself as it is. If you knew how often I think about sneaking into your room." My pulse quickens.
"Is this what I can expect, Lieutenant Ryerson?" Grady asks, color rising in his neck. "You pulling title into military matters? There's a reason aristocrats don't wear black."
"Happens more often than you think," I mutter, signing it discreetly to my friend. Jacinia lifts the quill and doesn't record my smart-ass remark, but she definitely fights off a laugh.
"Depends on how those matters are handled," Zayden threatens, his hand motions sharpening as he signs, and his tone slipping into that dangerous calm that makes the lieutenants across from us shift in their seats and my gaze flicker his way.
The hair rises on the back of my neck. There's a flash of something, cold in his eyes, but it's gone with a single blink.
"Huh. You and I are going to have problems," Captain Grady warns.
"Probably," Zayden nods. Grady breathes deeply as the flush creeps to his jawline.
"As we were saying, we've been given 6 months to find the seventh breed. The Scenarium has ordered that we report back between searching potential sites to keep them informed."
"What a fucking waste of time," Zayden says.
"Which means selecting our first search areas with an easy flight," Grady continues.
"Just wait, it gets better."
I pick up my pen and roll it between my forefingers and thumb to keep myself busy.
"I miss your hands."
"Same."
He keeps his eyes on the map, but a band of shadow curls up my leg beneath the table and wraps around my upper thigh.
"And your mouth? Especially if that's all I'm allowing myself."
It's on the tip of my mental tongue to tell him he doesn't have to limit himself, but I'm sure drawing more power from the Earth on his last mission isn't exactly evoking confidence in his self-control.
"And I have chosen to begin along the northward coastline," Captain Grady finishes. Zayden's brows hit the ceiling.
"Told you it got better."
Captain Henson drums her fingers on the table.
"Why?"
Grady clears his throat. "Basing our operation at the coastline gives us access to magic,
Plus, the Emerald Sea is largely unexplored.
Because sailors don't return from the deepest waters, Henson retorts, then looks my way. Where would your dragon like to search?
Cadet Sorengale isn't in charge, Aura interrupts.
You're only here because I chose not to kill you for going after my wing leader, I reply.
This is a mistake. The only people I trust in this room are you and Jacinia, and she's reporting the missions after we return, not going on them.
Agreed. Shadows swirl along the base of the wall.
Mira should add some balance, but not enough.
The last known communication we have with any Isle Kingdom is Devarelli, I say into the awkward silence. From what I've read, the Merchant Isle trades in more than goods. If there's information to be had there, we can buy it for the right price. We should search all possible avenues, not just the north.
Jacinia subtly nods as she records what I've suggested. Everyone across from us starts speaking at once.
They'll kill us if we go there.
Splitting our forces weakens the squad. Dragon haters, all of them. If the dragons were on the Isles, one of them would have bragged.
Or used them in an assault, I mutter mentally.
What do you know? Zayden asks, and the band of shadow strokes my inner thigh.
Fuck, it's hard to think when he does that.
Records of the second Crovelin uprising have been ripped out of General Cadeo's journal, and Jacinia thinks an officer hinted that an Isle Kingdom was involved hundreds of years after we severed contact. General Atos asked me about my father's research on the subject last year.
Feathertails. Zayden's jaw ticks.
I vaguely remember him mentioning something about it on our way to the flight field.
Exactly. Dragons mentioned with Isles tells me we should look south.
I watch the others descend into shouting, their hands flying as they sign, and Aura is the shrillest of them all. Pretty bold, coming from a cadet.
I don't know the contents of Dad's research, but I do remember him suddenly going secretive with it about 6 months before he died. If he'd wanted Atos or Markham to have it, he would have left the information in his archives office.
As opposed to, he glances my way as the shouting only grows.
It's in their quarters, I wince. General Atos's quarters.
Don't worry, Dane's agreed to help me find it.
Zayden cracks his neck.
Don't worry and Dane do not belong in the same sentence.
Silence! Grady shouts, his complexion fully ruddy. Aside from already provided logic, Devarelli requires too high a price for an audience. South is not an option, he says to me, then turns toward Captain Henson. And as for the Emerald Sea, perhaps dragons are the reason sailors don't return? Until further notice, assume we will fly northward in the next month. Prepare your supplies. This meeting is adjourned.
Fuck. Every bone in my body says to fly south.
Stay, Zayden says. I'd kill for 30 seconds with you.
Absolutely. A freaking hug sounds great.
Zayden and I hang behind as everyone files out, even Jacinia. But Aura Binehaven waits at the door like a nursemaid, her brow arched as I gather my things.
Yes, Aura? I ask as I close my pack.
Just waiting to escort you back to the Quadrant. She looks pointedly at Zayden. Wouldn't want you getting in trouble or doing something I'd have to report to General Atos, seeing as Grady chose me as your companion and all.
More like a fucking chaperone.
Do you mean Pancheck? She shakes her head. Atos made it clear to the wing leaders that the code of conduct is to be followed to the letter. Her eyes narrow. Naturally, we've passed that order down through the chain of command. Turns out there are lots of us happy to make your life as miserable as possible.
Great. I force a smile, and the shadow slips from my thigh as I walk past Zayden, keeping even my eyes to myself so she doesn't have anything to report.
We'll get time, he promises.
You're safe here. That's all that matters.
At least until we go northward.
An excerpt from Griffins of Poromiel, A Study in Combat, by Major Garion Savoy.
Some combat signets are fearsome, but any rider can be brought low by two things: lack of a shield or a group effort. Never give the enemy the advantage of surrounding you.
Chapter 15. By the time it's our squad's turn to descend the stone steps of the Infantry Quadrant's outdoor amphitheater on Friday, it's been another 4 days since I've seen Zayden. And he keeps his shields up so frequently that we may as well just start writing letters again. Carved into a northern ridgeline just west of the Infantry Quadrant, the Half Dome Arena is more fighting pit than lecture hall. It's capable of seating all 1,000-plus infantry cadets, but this afternoon, the magically warmed space only holds our squad, Caroline Ashton's from First Wing, and the devastatingly beautiful man standing in the middle of the flat base of the amphitheater, impatience carved on every line of his face. I've always loved him in uniform, but there's something about seeing him in tight-fitted sparring gear, swords strapped across his back, that makes me instantly wish this was a private teaching session. "This is incredible," Sloane says ahead of me. "The snow is piled up along the edges, but it feels like summer in here." "Weather ward?" Lynx guesses, ruffling the melting snow off his short black hair. "I'd guess there's a little more to it than that, given the way the magic pulled at me like a sticky piece of toffee while walking through. I'm sure weather isn't the only thing we're keeping out." Shadows brush against my shields as I strip out of my winter flight jacket midway down the steps, and I crack open just enough of my defenses to let Zayden in.